You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we are welcoming slash preparing to learn from P.O. Piotrowski. Hopefully I said that right.
Tim Piotrowski, but I go by P.O. all the time.
Oh, I only knew he was P.O.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most people do.
Okay. Are you okay with me calling you P.O.?
That's perfect.
Okay, cool. From Delta Beer Lab, which is super awesome because that means that we have a man that makes beer in the studio. So, P.O., tell me what's going on with Delta Beer Lab. You guys have a whole new thing going on.
Yeah, Delta Beer Lab is a pretty interesting concept. First and foremost, I have a decade of professional brewing experience.
Okay.
And running the organization, I knew that I wouldn't be able to do it all, so we definitely sought to have another professional join our team.
Okay.
And hired Barrett Leon Seaton to run the brewery for us.
Okay.
And he has 6 years of professional brewing experience. So right off the bat, opening day, we had 16 years in professional breweries, understanding the workflow, understanding the market, and you know, we were able to hit the ground running because of that.
Sure.
So that's the primary driver that makes us somewhat unique.
Okay.
But we also have a couple social avenues that are unique to our business.
Yeah, and, hugely unique.
Yeah. So the largest one of that is a year-round program. We're part of 1% for the Planet.
Okay.
And that was started by Patagonia.
Okay.
And it asks organizations, businesses, to commit 1% of all of their revenue, either from a product line, if that's how they choose to register their membership, or from the entire business. And we chose from our entire business. So it's taproom revenue, distribution revenue, the merchandise.
You're talking revenue, not profit.
Revenue.
Revenue.
So 1% of all of our revenue is dedicated to nonprofit organizations working for environmental projects or services. And we will focus. We haven't chosen our organizations yet. We have to do it by the end of the year. But the areas that we're most interested in are water quality and climate change.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that breweries are dramatically affected by both of those issues.
Hugely, I would say. Yeah.
And we also affect those areas.
Sure.
We use a lot of water.
Sure.
We use natural gas to heat our boiler. Which runs our kettle. And we want to make sure that we are good stewards as best as we can. So that not only does society survive well into the future, but breweries continue to make great beer.
Sure, right? Leave it better than you found it, right?
Absolutely.
Just like camping. So you raised a few angles there. There's another one that you do as well, right?
Yeah. We, in our tap room specifically, well, actually company-wide, we pay a living wage. And that living wage is set by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT.
Oh.
And they do that for every community in the country.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they have a survey that looks at all the different costs for living in that area. So they look at housing costs.
Sure.
They look at food costs, transportation, how far people have to travel to work on average. And they come up with a number that is the living wage. So that is not the saving wage.
Sure.
That's just the living wage.
Okay.
And then they break it down by one adult, one child, one adult, two child, children.
Sure.
And there's a huge spectrum of there. So if you just look at MIT, search MIT living wage, you can find the living wage in whatever area in the country you want to look at.
Wow. Yeah. How focused do they go?
They have one for Madison and they have one for Dane County, I think.
Okay. So like if I'm in the middle of northern Wisconsin or something like
that? Yeah, then it would probably, like Rhinelander probably is just Oneida County. There might not be a Rhinelander specific one.
Okay.
And
how much time are they devoting?
I'm sure there's algorithms where they pull from publicly available data.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how often they update it.
Sure.
But currently the Dane County, or maybe it's Madison, one of the two, is $12.44 an hour.
Okay.
So that works out to be about $25,000 a year for a full-time employee.
Sure.
And that's way better than minimum wage.
Sure.
But it's still tough.
Right.
And so the next step of our program is to have revenue sharing available to all employees. And again, that's revenue, not profit.
Right.
Because I can control profit. through various accounting things.
Sure.
Or choosing to spend...
From a percentage standpoint.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Like we could make a capital purchase and our, sure, you know, profit goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to make it transparent and show our employees that if you help this company, if you work for our mission,
sure,
then the company will do better.
Sure.
And you get a larger share of that revenue.
Uh-huh, sure.
Not a larger percentage, but the percentage of the total is larger.
Right.
And so our taproom employees have a percentage that they divide out.
Okay.
When we hire assistant brewers, they'll have a different percentage. So taproom employees will be based on taproom revenue.
Sure.
Brewery employees will not be based on necessarily revenue in the taproom, but
sure,
all beer that's produced because that's the thing they touch.
Sure, wherever it goes. Yeah. Okay.
So that
makes sense.
The area of your focus is the area where you get revenue sharing.
Sure. Interesting.
And so how do you pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
Is a question. We pay, basically charge a dollar more than a comparable place,
okay,
for each of our beers.
Sure.
Our keg prices are a little higher than the average keg price.
Okay.
And that's because we're not taking tips.
Mm-hmm.
The whole program is based on our staff working for our mission, like I said.
Sure.
And so...
So it almost to the consumer becomes a wash.
Yes, exactly.
To a point, like I know when I order beer, there's a typical dollar tip, and I always wonder, why am I tipping you a dollar to pour a glass of beer?
Yeah.
Like, am I tipping? I would much rather tip the guy making the beer than the, he's doing more work than just said open a spout here.
And that's kind of part of it. Yeah, so it's an educational opportunity that we have to,
sure,
show that everybody that touches the process should get paid appropriately and,
sure,
and should reap the benefits of being part of a good organization.
Sure, that makes sense.
And it's unique. It'll take some time, but we always have good conversations around it.
Oh, I bet.
And people are pretty excited about it.
How long have you guys been open?
We opened February 18th.
Okay, so you're talking
not quite six months.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't push it.
So, yeah. So it's still fairly new.
Yeah.
So what has been the response from customers and stuff like that?
Mostly it's been incredible.
Okay.
That people love what we're doing.
Yeah.
They'll put it on their social media to tell people that, you know, that it's such a unique process and
sure,
their element, and encourage other people to come, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And some people, a lot of people still feel a great desire to leave a tip.
Sure.
And we knew that would happen from the beginning.
Oh, sure.
And so the thing that we do with those tips, which we will consider donations, is we work with a different nonprofit organization each month.
Oh, nice.
And dedicate all the tips that are left at the bar or
sure,
that we put on a credit card to that nonprofit organization. So we've raised over $1,700 one month, over $1,200 the next.
Wow.
I haven't done all the numbers for last month, but I think
sure,
it's around 2,000.
Holy cow.
And that was for the River Food Pantry,
okay,
which serves all of Dane County
sure,
and works to make sure that people don't go hungry.
Right.
So a lot of kids are coming out of school right now.
Mm-hmm.
And lunch might not be readily available.
Sure.
So one of their big programs is to provide 30,000 meals, lunches, to kids around Dane County, I think at five different sites.
Wow.
And that $2,000 will pay for about 5% of those meals, which is pretty incredible.
Interesting.
And so that's our guests,
mm-hmm,
showing how much they care about our community.
Sure.
Like, we're not taking that money. Our guests are sending it through us.
Sure.
Right to the River Food Pantry. And for June, it's the Ice Age Trail Alliance.
Oh, very cool.
So we got a cool thing going on tomorrow where that's our kickoff event for Ice Age Trail Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a very large beard.
Yeah.
I hiked the Appalachian Trail in 2017,
yep,
and I haven't shaved since.
Okay.
So as part of our effort, the largest donor tomorrow night, we'll get the opportunity to shave my beard all the way off.
Oh, really?
Or they could leave the mustache. They can do whatever they want.
Sure.
And I'll keep it that way for a day, and then I'm going to clean shave for the first time in 2 years.
Wow, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it
all started with the Appalachian Trail, and now we're
sure,
giving back to the Ice Age Trail.
Very cool.
Just trying to do good in whatever ways we can.
Sure. That's awesome. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the River Food Pantry, because I did some volunteering through Big Brothers Big Sisters for them, and we had all these barrels set up all around town collecting food and all this jazz, and we had to rent a truck, and it was this big ordeal. And remember, we had, I want to say we had $200 invested in all this kind of stuff. We came back, we brought all this food, and they weigh it, and they say, you rah-rah, you know. And I'm like, if we would have just given you this cash, what would you have gotten? And they told us poundage wise, and it was like double.
You brought in double the weight?
No. Right. We brought in half what they could have done with the dollars. And I thought, oh my gosh, we just went through all this headache. Yeah. And I guess people felt good and all that kind of stuff. And it was probably marketing for them, which great. But I was
You probably also find that people will leave goods,
yeah,
but also money.
Yeah, in our case, it was just, the food dress. It was just goods because it was just barrels randomly placed in different workplaces and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't really an opportunity to leave money, which maybe
we have a barrel, and which we have to give over to the River Food Pantry now,
sure,
because May is over. But we have a barrel, and we did the cash donation,
sure.
And one of the neat things is that we were a little slow to fill the barrel at first,
mm-hmm.
And our previous organization was Badgerland Softball, which is the LGBTQ plus softball organization in the area. And one night, I think the second game of the season, they asked our participants to bring peanut butter and jelly.
Sure.
And we filled up that bin.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's awesome.
So it's pretty neat that we raised money for one organization the previous month.
Right.
And they really came together and helped the organization the second month.
Oh, super cool.
And it just shows how interconnected we are.
Yeah, insanely. So you have business partners in the business?
Yeah, there's 17 investor households.
17?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of a big number and kind of a small number.
But it was more than I was expecting, not necessarily good or bad.
There's only two of us that are actively involved in the day-to-day.
Sure.
But one of the neat things is that all 17 households are a first ring connection to me.
Oh, very cool.
So there's no capital investors that you know, angel investors there's no big money.
Okay.
Pretty much there's all people that believe in what we're the differences we're trying to make, and the quality of beer that we're producing,
right?
And they put their money where their mouth is.
Sure. That's awesome. Yeah. Very cool. So you have a few employees, I imagine.
Yeah, we now have 10.
Okay. All right. And that's everyone from people helping in the back, and then people serving, I imagine, in the front?
Yep, we have four managers and six beer tenders.
Okay.
And so I run the general operations.
Sure.
And I brew when I write the recipe.
Okay.
Our brewer, Barrett, handles most of the brewery.
Okay.
He does his own recipe development, and then he takes care of a lot of the cleaning and packaging and managing when our beer tenders help out.
Sure.
With canning and
gotcha.
And all the various activities that are that are back there.
Sure.
Speedy is her title is right hand.
I remember that.
She is my right hand.
Sure.
And she's in charge of the tap room at this point. And then when we grow to a point that we need to hire somebody else, she will take on her right hand duties and take the next project.
Oh, very cool.
And then we just hired Quinn, who is our marketing manager.
Okay.
Working to reach out to the community and show what we have to offer.
Sure.
A place to gather, a place to hang out, play games.
Sure.
Celebrate and enjoy some craft beer.
Very cool. And last time I talked to you, there was talk of getting food of some kind in there. There are food carts or something like that.
We've had some food carts weekends. The area that we're in South Madison doesn't have a lot of restaurants, and it's definitely a need for the two housing communities that are on either side of us.
Mm-hmm.
But my passion is definitely for beer and not so much running a restaurant.
That's a footnote.
So we're working on avenues for how we can encourage, incubate, create opportunity.
Sure.
We have a space in our facility that we haven't built out.
Yeah.
But it's intended to be a kitchen.
Sure.
And I would love if we find the partners that are interested in exploring this.
Sure.
To build out that kitchen
and
then have 3 to 5 food carts or small caterers.
Sure.
That want to use that space.
Right.
Serve our tap room, take their food cart offsite.
Mm-hmm.
Cater events based out of there. Any number of things that where we can provide an opportunity for another small business to start or expand or reach opportunities and also provide some food in our neighborhoods.
Right. That's awesome. So that led me to, I love the segues here. You're helping me out here. You talk about the space. When I was in the space, I was blown away because it's such a good looking space. It's way bigger than I anticipated. It's very clean. And it's just well laid out. So can you talk about the space itself?
Sure. We call the tap room our social laboratory.
Okay.
if you didn't catch by now, the laboratory theme. Let me back up a little bit. So we chose the name Delta because we missed out on our trademark for Forward Beer Company.
Oh, really?
By 2 days.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. But the Forward is, you know, our state's motto.
Sure.
And it's also an indication of progress.
Right.
And when, you know, things happen for a reason, mm-hmm. and I think we ended up in a really good place because Delta is the symbol for change in math and chemistry.
Okay.
And change is the progress that we're looking to do in several ways. In the brewery, we change 4 simple ingredients, barley malt, water, yeast, and hops.
Sure.
Into a wide variety of beers.
Huge, yeah.
So that is the physical change that happens.
Sure.
In our scientific brewery.
Okay.
And then in the tap room, mm-hmm. in the social lab, we have the opportunity to create social change where we, the way that it's laid out intentionally is to bring people together so that people are sitting next to folks they don't know. Conversations come up, and we see this all the time,
yeah.
where somebody interjects and has something to offer
sure.
to the conversation. A lot of people come together and play games.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bunch of board games. We have steel tip darts and shuffleboard.
Sure.
And it's a way for people to hang out, exchange ideas,
yeah.
reminisce, dream, and make change.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I didn't pick up on that the first time. I know you have the bar itself is laid out in a
triangle.
Triangle. Okay.
Because that's the delta.
Sure. Gotcha. I'm picking up on this. but the tables themselves are not individual tables. They're long tables.
Right. And so we have the bar top, and then we have this Y-shaped table, and all those surfaces are epoxy resin, the same mm-hmm. stuff you remember from high school chemistry.
Right.
We've got a couple sinks for water that are the same gooseneck faucets with the serrated end.
Sure.
Just like in chemistry right. class. And
just without the gas next to it.
Yeah. Everybody asks about Bunsen burners.
Yeah,
like,
I bet.
alcohol and fire.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Yeah, right. All those tables have bar stools with
mm-hmm.
Chair backs.
Sure.
They're the most comfortable chairs in the place.
Right.
And they're the chairs where you have to sit next to other people.
Sure.
And so that the best place to sit is mm-hmm. in a community setting.
Yeah.
And then we offer a couple high top tables that have stools that don't have backs.
Sure.
And that would be the next most comfortable place to sit, but you might get 3 to 6 people around that
sure,
table.
Sure.
And then we have a couple really small high tops that it's 2 people standing around.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want you to be standing around.
Right.
We want you to move into a
right.
more comfortable seat and interact with more people.
Sure.
The tap room was completely designed to be a social laboratory.
Right. That's awesome. That's incredible that you set that up. Because I find I got a buddy and I, we travel different places all over the country. And we end up going to a fair number of bars and restaurants. And you're always meeting people. That's part of the fun.
Right.
Is that you're meeting people. And a lot of time you're just meeting people that either are alone or it's just a couple or something like that. And you're chatting with them and what they know and who they're telling you to go see or meet or do, whatever. It's super cool.
And you find out they have weird connections, like third, fourth friend connections that you know the same person.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Went to the same school.
Or, yep. Or yeah. just being in Madison, we know. I think half the world has been to Madison at party at least once. So usually that's a solid in. But it's interesting that you set up your place essentially to grow those.
Encourage interaction, yeah.
That's super cool.
I guess some other elements as we're visualizing this tap room.
Sure.
Is that we have a really large chalkboard,
mm-hmm.
A two-piece chalkboard.
Yeah.
And we have got a whole bunch of scientific stuff on the top board, and then the bottom one can be used for scoring cricket.
Sure.
And for darts. Or,
oh, nice.
Sometimes there's quotes up there.
Yeah.
The Wi-Fi password, obviously.
Right. must have. In case you don't want to interact.
Yep,
right?
Yep. And the top chalkboard slides down to reveal an 85-inch TV.
Oh, sure. So 85. That's
yeah,
a big TV.
But in that space, it looks tiny.
Sure. Okay.
But we know that we want to, part of community is to get together for a Packer game.
Sure.
Or when the UW women won the hockey championship.
Yep.
We were showing that game and we had a good crowd.
Sure.
Women's World Cup is this summer and we're going to show
nice.
At least the U.S. games.
Okay.
And so we want to have that element where people get together in community to celebrate their
sure.
team. But we don't want to have TV on all the time. So right. you slide up the chalkboard and you hide the TV.
And no one's asking for reruns of Archie Bunker.
Right. Our other two TVs are digital menu boards.
Sure.
For big events, we could switch them over to TV.
Sure.
But for most of the time, there's no live broadcast on.
Sure.
There's no news. There's no weather showing because we want people to interact with each other.
Sure. Very cool. Now, one of the things that I want to talk to you about is you're in the alcohol business. And the alcohol business in Wisconsin, there's a lot of laws and stuff like that. So how do you navigate through all that? Or what have been some of the challenges that maybe even knew ahead of time were going to be challenges, but you're having to deal with them now?
Yeah, the laws around beer or alcohol are
antiquated.
Large.
Okay.
A large burden.
Sure.
And they're different in every state.
Okay.
And so states like California and Colorado, Oregon, Washington, to some extent,
yeah.
are pretty free places where brewers of various sizes have a lot of flexibility.
Okay.
And a lot of other states have a lot less flexibility.
Okay.
The Midwest is pretty much in the middle.
Okay.
And I was previously in Minnesota.
Sure.
I'm from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, but I've worked in California, Colorado, Minnesota.
Sure.
And one of the reasons for coming back home to Wisconsin, was that we could sell a six pack or a four pack of 16-ounce cans, or a keg to a consumer out of the brewery.
Oh, nice.
In Minnesota, you couldn't do that.
Oh, really?
It's kind of a crazy antiquated system that we have that comes from the era after Prohibition.
Sure.
And it seems like you could sell a growler in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And we can do that here.
Okay.
But those small packages, that six pack of 12-ounce cans or four pack of 16-ounce cans was too small where you're cutting into somebody else's business.
But in reality, you really gotta drink. Okay.
That can package is one of the best packages there are because you can take it just about anywhere.
Yeah.
To the beach, on a boat.
Yeah.
To some sort of sporting events.
Sure.
And cans protect beer in the best ways. It protects it from all light that you don't have light struck character, which is the skunky character.
Mm-hmm.
It protects it from oxygen because there's that cap that's on the bottle sometimes will let oxygen through.
Okay.
So you don't get oxidation. Aluminum is infinitely recyclable.
Sure.
So as long as you recycle,
mm-hmm.
public service announcement,
right.
please recycle.
Right.
As long as you recycle, aluminum can, a pound of aluminum can turn into a pound of aluminum.
Sure.
Whereas
just endlessly.
Endlessly.
Melt it and mold it.
It's not environmentally friendly to mine bauxite.
Sure.
Whereas mining for glass, which is sand, is very easy.
Okay.
But melting down that glass every time is really energy intensive using
sure.
a ton of fossil fuels.
Sure.
And so one of the things I wanted to do for a long time was to be able to sell cans from the brewery.
Oh, sure.
Another reason to come back to Wisconsin, back home, was to have that law
right.
on our side.
Wow. Okay. So are you, it sounds like you're doing some distribution beyond just your place.
Yeah, we're selling kegs in bars and restaurants, mostly around the Madison area.
Okay.
Some of the Dane County communities as well.
Sure.
And in a little bit of central Wisconsin, because I'm from Stevens Point. And
sure.
We've got some connections up there. And so I stop home and see my folks in Stevens Point and drop off beer at a couple places up there.
Oh, very cool. So can you go across state lines?
We looked at that. The Free House is the place that I built in Minnesota for Blue Plate Restaurant Company.
Yeah.
And they were nice enough to let us borrow over 100 kegs.
Okay.
Because that saved us a ton of capital up
sure.
front and the interest that goes along with that in
right.
our loan.
Right.
And I figured that a nice thing to do would be to sell them beer in their kegs when I'd give
right,
them back.
Right.
But the barrier to entry, because we would have to register, again, these alcohol laws you asked about.
Yeah.
The barrier to entry is to become a wholesaler. So we have to pay for like $1,000 wholesaler's license.
Oh.
And then we also have to be an importer because we're importing into the state of Minnesota.
Sure.
Which is another $1,000 or something. Like the total cost of entry was about $2,500.
Oh, wow.
That you would have to come up with in a smaller margin
sure.
that you're getting on that keg.
Because it's wholesale.
Right.
Interesting.
So
okay.
we would have to go full-on distribution into Minnesota,
yeah.
which we're not even doing in Madison yet.
Not just a favor. This would be a big
yeah.
to do.
So it's it's a little unfortunate that there's not a smaller barrier to overcome for small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
It seems in a lot of ways that states' issues could be a little more federal, so that we could all be one United States and work across state lines, mm-hmm. and that people are people wherever they live.
Right.
Products are products wherever they go.
Right.
But that's not the world we're living in right now. So we'll get there eventually.
All right. Interesting. Yeah. It's interesting.
Not the law change part. we'll go into Minnesota eventually.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. So now, does that explain, if you're having that challenge, then that means that every brewery is essentially having that challenge?
Yep.
So does that limit, pretty much state to state between most states and most other states?
I think if the brewery is big enough, or they have distribution networks or want to have a large presence in another state, then it's not that big of a deal, because $2,500 is not that much if you're selling a couple hundred barrels of beer in another state.
Sure.
And it's probably the biggest deal for breweries that are in border cities.
Oh, sure.
Because if you look at like a radius that you want to distribute into,
right,
half the radius might be cut off into another state.
Sure.
And when they're small, they're going to choose not to go there because of the cost of entry.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense. So if you're in Hudson.
Right.
Okay. Interesting. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is the volume of breweries that are popping up is insane. I mean, like, we're in Sun Prairie, right?
Yep.
And they just opened two
this year.
Two places. One, I hadn't even seen the building until this past weekend. I'd seen it from a distance, I guess, but never up close.
Yeah, there's Full Mile Brewery and Kitchen and Wright Bauer Brewing.
Yeah.
Both have an incredible ownership team, great people.
Yeah.
Making fabulous beer and really unique from each other.
Okay.
Atmospheres.
Sure.
But both good in their own way. And that's what I love about the brewery scene.
Yeah.
Is that oftentimes the tap room, the packaging design really reflects the feelings and the passion and the interests of the people that are running it.
Absolutely, there's a character there.
There is definitely.
Yeah, sure, that makes sense.
It's not just kitschy branding.
No. The joke I always joke with my buddies that I'm gonna get a job naming paint or naming beer, because I think that would be so much fun.
Talk about segues.
Yeah.
We don't name beer.
You don't name your beer?
Because of that.
Oh, because it's all this kitschy.
So, like, after Prohibition, which was pretty disastrous, we should never do that again.
Yeah, we'll just avoid that.
There were, I'll get the numbers wrong, but let's say that there were 13 breweries in the country.
Sure.
Making all of the yellow fizzy beer that you could want.
Sure.
And they often had a yellow lager that might be, I won't refer to names.
Sure.
But they probably had an American lager, and in the spring, because they're mostly of German heritage,
right?
Probably had a spring Bock.
Sure.
And in the winter or the fall, they might make an Oktoberfest, maybe.
Sure.
Which they might call Märzen.
Okay.
And that was it. And they probably called it by that style, or they had, if they had those three beers, they had to have three whole names.
Sure.
Now, I think we're pretty darn close to 8,000 breweries in the country.
That's a lot of breweries.
I remember it was a little early in my career when craft breweries met the previous high number of breweries, which was like 2,500.
Sure.
So before Prohibition, there were about 2,500, 2,600 breweries.
Sure.
And in my career, we got back up to that number.
Wow.
And now we're at almost 8,000. And so if you think about a craft brewery that probably produces 20 to 40 beers a year.
Sure.
If you name all of those beers and you multiply it by 8,000,
that's a lot of names.
That's a lot of words.
Yeah.
That are no longer available.
Yeah.
Or they're overlapping, and sometimes there's unfortunate.
Oh, trademark issues and stuff like that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So we avoided that for the time being. We've got a bunch of names in the old noggin, but we're currently using that scientific concept.
Okay.
And we break all beer styles that we make into categories.
Okay.
So like Belgian is BLG and kettle sours are KSR.
Okay.
Porter is PTR and
Golden
is GLD. And so we give them letters, kind of like the periodic table.
Yeah.
And then they get a code, and that code is the in order. So tomorrow we're releasing our second Belgian beer, which is a Belgian IPA.
Okay.
And it's BLG.02.
Okay.
So it's the second one. IPAs, we're on 7 so okay. far.
So these are just refinements, almost?
Total new recipes.
Total new recipe. Yeah.
If it's a new beer, it gets a new number.
Okay.
The next number in line.
Okay.
But so we're going to make a lot of IPAs.
Okay.
People tend to say that they're popular.
Sure.
and so we're on our 7th IPA, so it's .07.
Sure.
IPA.07. And because there's so many, we wanted to give another differentiator. Mm-hmm. And so we add another digit for a bitterness scale. You know, zero through 9. So 7 is IPA.07.4.
All right.
So it's basically the mid-range for bitterness.
Sure. So the bitterness.
So that's how we name our beers.
The bitterness is subjective, or is that?
No, it's objective. Okay. Yeah, it's so there's an international bitterness unit scale, IBUs.
Okay.
And it goes basically from 0 to 120. That's detectable by the human palate.
Okay.
And so we didn't make it completely linear. We took the chunk of the range that most IPAs are in.
Sure.
From like 50 to 80
okay.
IBUs. And we put most of the numbers in that segment.
Gotcha.
And then we whittled it down. There's more IBUs numbers.
Okay.
In the upper and lower ends.
Sure.
Because those won't be used as much.
Okay. So this is like a little piece of paper you stick in the beer and it comes out a different color?
If the number's high. Oh, no. Lots of calculations.
Okay.
And then some testing to validate.
Gotcha.
We send samples away to validate.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
That our formulas, based on the ingredients going in.
Okay.
We could geek about that on another segment.
Sure, that's fair. Not like some bat computer where it just tells you. Okay, cool. So when you have, let's say you have your IPA 7.4.
Four, yep.
What does that mean, that you have also an IPA 7 or 6?
There's
5.4?
6.8. Actually, it was brewed before 7.4,
okay.
But it hasn't been released yet.
All right.
It's an Imperial IPA that'll come in at about 12% alcohol.
Wow.
Yep. It's a big one.
Okay.
And the 0.8 on the IPA or the bitterness scale relates to 95 IBUs.
Okay.
So
interesting.
So it's up there.
All right.
It's a big beer.
Wow.
That comes out a week from tomorrow.
So if somebody comes in, they're like, "I just want an IPA." You have to say.
We have to say, which one do you want?
Yeah, we got 72 to choose from. Or whatever. How many beers do you have on tap at any given
Currently,
time?
Currently, we have 10.
Okay.
The goal is to get to 12 on tap by the end of the year. We're going to get there sooner.
Okay.
But some of that's variance.
Okay.
So the second time we made our Goza,
mm-hmm.
Which is KSR.01, for kettle sour again.
Okay.
We took half of that, the new batch, and we put it on top of pineapple puree.
Oh.
And so it's a significantly different beer. It has
it has
the same exact base.
Sure.
But it has a beautiful pineapple flavor that carries out throughout the drinking process.
Sure.
Throughout the enjoyment of those flavors. And so it got a new number.
Oh,
it's
cool.
KSR.02 because
okay.
it's so different from its base beer.
Sure.
But they really started out as the same beer. So we aged that first bit, carbonated it, kegged it off.
Yeah.
And then we've finished off the second bit, which is traditional Goza.
Sure.
Just a hint of salt and coriander.
Okay.
To flavor up a German wheat beer that's
sure.
soured in the kettle.
Okay.
So it's got a lot of tartness.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So from one base beer,
yeah.
we have two beers on tap.
Sure.
And there are places to play with that. It's a science lab, you know?
That's super cool. So stuff like that, how do you experiment on a small scale before you go massive, or do you?
I don't.
Okay, hope it's good.
I've been in the industry long enough, and so has Barrett, that knowing your ingredients and understanding mm-hmm. how flavors interact with each other
sure.
Allow us to make almost every recipe empirically.
Okay.
And then brew 10 barrels, which is 20 kegs worth.
Wow.
I have homebrewed one recipe twice in my whole career.
Okay.
And that was the State Fair beer in Minnesota.
Sure.
It was a caramel apple pie cider beer, so it was half cider, half beer.
Okay.
We won't get into the details, but had a lot of crystal malt, which doesn't have any enzymes in it because
okay.
the roasting process killed them all.
Sure.
And so like the minimum amount of base malt to provide the enzymes to convert the crystal malt.
Yeah.
Yada yada yada. Was part of that experiment. How the the wort, the beer base, and the cider base. We're going to interact with each other and to yield a flavor, plus a bunch of different caramel methods, to basically make this liquid, this beer, taste like caramel apple pie. And we succeeded.
Okay.
It was very sweet. It sold a lot of we sold a lot of beer at the state fair.
That's awesome.
But that one required some like home brewing.
Okay.
In the restaurants.
Because you're going uncharted territory.
Yeah.
There, I
suppose. Totally new world. So, okay. But most if we're making a beer and we look at the style and the flavor profiles, we can write the recipe and then brew 10 barrels.
Very cool.
Yeah. One fun experiment that we did just do. Barrett had a red IPA, which was IPA.02.4.
Okay.
And it was this beautiful malty, like if you think almost Irish red. On one side, like that was the flavor that hit you first.
Okay.
And then it was followed up because it was an IPA, by the spiciness of Chinook hops.
Okay.
They were the flavor profile when you tasted this beer were on two wide ends of the spectrum of the flavor spectrum.
Okay.
And that used five different malts from three different maltsters.
Wow.
One from Minnesota, one from Wisconsin, and one from England.
Okay.
And we got approached by Proximity Malts out of Milwaukee to try their malt out. They're pretty new at it, although the maltster came from Brees originally, which is out of Chilton, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And so we said yes. The best beer to do this experiment was our red our malty IPA,
right?
Because it sells well, and we wanted to see how this malt would shine in it.
Sure.
So we took all five of those different types of malt: the base malt, the crystal malt, the Vienna malt, and we chose Proximity's version of that.
Sure.
Made the recipe. And the result was less on the sweet maltiness, and the base beer turned out more like a like an alt beer. It was a little edgier, definitely more closer to the IPA spectrum. So we didn't have the wide ends of the flavor spectrum.
Sure,
we had like a mid-range toffee, crisp beer.
Yeah,
with a lot less sweetness.
Okay,
and the exact same hop profile.
Oh, interesting.
So it was a fun experiment to see how their different ingredients play.
Sure.
And that's something that we're probably going to continue to do into the future.
That's one thing that I wanted to ask that I just don't understand. When you're making beer, you have your recipes and all that kind of stuff, but the ingredients that you're using are natural, right? So you're based on plants, and plants are based on weather and how they're taken care of and stored, blah, blah, blah. So how do you keep a consistent product when you're using products that or ingredients, I should say, that may not be that consistent?
That's a good question. We're lucky enough that our industry is advanced beyond the days when Sierra Nevada was a dream.
Okay.
Back in the 70s and 80s.
Sure.
And when we order malt, it comes with a certificate of analysis.
Oh.
So we know how much extract potential there is in it, how friable the malt is.
Oh,
we
wow.
We know its color.
Okay.
Capability. We know the variety of barley that was the base for that malt. So and there too, malting is a process. So we're not using barley that's grown in the field.
Sure.
That barley goes to a maltster where they do another process. Basically, they incubate it and make it want to grow.
Okay.
Which helps the conversion process.
Sure.
And so there is a intermediary step to that.
Okay.
Same thing on the hop side. There's not an intermediary step necessarily, but those hops come out of the field, they get tested, stored, then they get broken out throughout the winter and pelletized into a much more shelf-stable package for us.
Okay.
And they get analyzed again. And so when we buy those hops, we also know the alpha acid content. We know obviously the crop year and where it was grown and whatnot.
Sure.
The oils that are in it that are natural.
Yeah.
But from those, from that data, from those numbers, I'll sidetrack here. Sometimes you asked about if we pilot beers.
Sure.
And I like to think of brewing as brewing by numbers. You
sure.
know, like paint by numbers.
Sure.
So as long as you have the recipe and you know all the numbers,
right,
you can make a consistent product from that. So when the alpha acid content in Cascade hops changes from one crop year to the next crop year, you can make an adjustment in the amount that you put in to yield the same bitterness or the same aroma that you're looking for. Same thing happens with malt.
Sure. All right.
So the biggest factor of change is yeast.
Okay.
Because it's a living organism.
Sure.
It's alive when we use it. We can reuse it over and over,
okay.
but not infinitely, because
okay.
it will mutate over time, and that mutation is what we're looking for, is to make sure that it's still performing and producing the flavor profile that
sure.
comes from the yeast
okay.
consistently.
And, okay.
and when it deviates enough from the specification,
yeah.
It's time to replace and start with a new pitch.
Gotcha. All right. So when you're shopping for some of this stuff, do you have to look at that card or those?
Oh, all the time.
That data to figure out?
All the time.
So it's not just order hops.
Nope.
You got to go in there and say, okay, what do we got? What do we got to work with here?
Exactly.
Interesting.
It's science.
That's gonna take some time.
It's science.
I guess. That's cool. So let's talk a little bit about ingredients and how you figured out what suppliers to use and all that jazz.
A lot of that comes from, years in the industry.
Sure.
I have suppliers I like because we have a great relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That I've used them in a lot of the companies that I've worked for in the past.
Sure.
And the one in particular is Brewer Supply Group out of Shakopee, Minnesota, owned by its parent company, Rar Malting.
Okay.
So they have a malting facility where they make our base malt.
Okay.
But they also house a lot of products.
Sure.
So they have one of the best selections of malt from around the world.
Oh, really?
So we get Weyermann from Germany. We get Simpsons from England. And a variety of other things. We get the coriander and the
sure.
orange peel that go into our whip beer.
Oh, wow.
We get hops through them, too. So they're not a broker, but they are a... I guess they kind of are a broker of all of our ingredients.
Sure.
A middleman. But they have an incredible selection. They have great
sure.
relationships and have forged incredible contracts with suppliers.
Sure.
To more or less offer a one-stop shop.
Mm-hmm.
But then beyond that, we always look at new vendors.
Sure.
Where proximity approaches us.
Right.
And says, do you want to, try our product? We taste it. We give feedback about tasting the raw ingredient.
Right.
And then we continue the conversation and decide,
mm-hmm.
okay, so we're gonna make a beer with this.
Sure.
And we're going to analyze how that worked in our system.
Sure.
And in this case, we chose, a beer that we had made
mm-hmm.
and a beer made with their product. And that gave us, we had a control,
sure.
essentially.
Sure.
To make that experiment.
That makes sense. So in the beers that you've
hops
made.
Hops are a little different because, sometimes they're hard to come by.
Oh.
And so, there's a lot of different brokers out there that work with farmers, and we work with a lot of different brokers who work with a lot of different farmers.
Sure.
And so, it's really, the supply chain's a little messier in the hop world.
Sure.
Until you get big enough where you're contracting certain varieties and certain lots.
Okay.
And there's also a secondary market where brewers that have too much of something offer it up to other brewers.
Oh, very
cool. And so we utilize a lot of different avenues in order to get the hops that
mm-hmm.
we need.
That is so interesting. All the brewers that I've met and worked with and stuff like this, they all seem to be willing to help each other.
Yeah, it's one of the things I love about the industry is that it's probably one of the most sharing industries that exist.
That's super cool.
And it could be that most of us started out small. That,
sure.
We learned along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Some people went to brewing school like I did.
Mm-hmm.
Others had a ton of experience.
Sure.
And because we're the David and the David and Goliath story,
sure.
Currently craft beer, which includes Boston Beer Company, which is a really large.
Huge company.
A huge company.
Yeah.
They're considered small.
Sure.
They're considered craft, I should say.
Are they really?
Yeah. They're our largest craft member.
Okay.
But so they're producing a ton of volume. But basically, the whole craft industry is about 12.5% market share.
That blows my mind.
So,
that
includes Boston Beer. That includes Sierra Nevada, New Glarus, New Belgium.
Sure.
Oscar Blues.
Wow.
And then 7,000 tiny breweries
sure.
like us. And so what incentive is there for us to compete head-to-head with each other?
Not much.
When the all we're going to be fighting over is
a fraction of 12%.
A fraction of a tiny percentage.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When what we can do is we can show the marketplace what craft beer is.
Sure.
And we can reach, we can take some of the 80-some percent that's still available.
Right.
and so that's, I think, where a lot of the collaboration, where the idea sharing and
sure.
The goodwill comes from in our industry. And I hope that as we continue to take market share,
mm-hmm.
that we remember that
right.
and that we are friendly, because some of the greatest times are when you go to one of your friends' breweries and you share a pint and
sure.
geek out about a piece of equipment that they have and,
right.
you generate an idea and that's kind of how craft has developed and
sure.
hopefully will continue to.
That's cool. There's a collaboration there. That's awesome. So have you ever made a beer, designed a beer, and you loved it, but the consumer base just was not a fan?
I have not done that, okay. but I made recently a beer that early in my career, I worked for a brewer that definitely made beer for himself.
Okay.
And I saw that person do not as well as other people that I worked
with.
I worked for a couple different breweries at the same time.
Sure.
And I learned early on that you mm-hmm. should make beer that your guest wants to drink, beer that mm-hmm. the consumer wants to drink,
mm-hmm.
And you'll do better every time.
Sure.
It's
their money, right?
It sure is. And so when we came out with IPA.04.7,
okay.
This hazy IPA, New England
yeah.
IPA craze is all the rage.
Sure.
I feel like I was on the Appalachian Trail in 2017 when this blew up, when it left New England and
sure.
and captivated all of America. And I was grateful that I didn't have a brewery at the time because I didn't have to choose to make that beer.
Sure.
Because you change so much about what you learned about the science of beer to make that beer successfully,
sure.
that style successfully.
Okay.
And it didn't feel right to do that.
Gotcha.
But it sells really well. So
sure.
ultimately we decided, you know, it's the guest beer. We should make
right.
beer for the guests.
Right.
And so we, you know, IPA 3.6 was a little more bitter than the New England style, but
sure.
definitely a hazy IPA. We used a lot of the tricks.
Okay.
And the science behind making that beer stay really cloudy.
Sure.
And, but it had the citrus, the floral bounty.
Sure.
Of the hazy IPA.
Okay.
So when we came to make the second hazy, which was one that I was really interested in,
yeah,
we made the anti-New England.
Okay.
So yeah. it was hazy, really cloudy.
Yeah.
But it was really bitter.
Okay.
And we used West Coast hops instead of the big, juicy citrus hops.
Gotcha.
Tropical hops.
Okay.
And I was afraid that this wasn't going to sell very well because
yeah.
it's... flies in the face of the trend.
Right.
And I was amazed at how many people keep coming back for that beer.
Cool.
They love it. It just shows that there are people looking for a spectrum.
Sure.
Even in the IPA category,
mm-hmm.
there's folks that want a really bitter, dank beer, and
mm-hmm.
there's folks that want a barely bitter at all,
right,
super fruity IPA.
Sure.
And everything in between. And styles completely adjacent to that, like
sure.
a good brown ale or porter.
Right. That's so cool. I like it. So you've been in business for 5 months, give or take. And how long did it take for you to start this from idea to we're rolling and brewing and selling?
I've had the idea for a long time, but it was probably in 2016 that really started getting real.
Sure.
And I was definitely in 2016. I spent a lot of time on my porch in Minneapolis,
okay.
working on taking an old business plan.
All right.
That when I reread it, I was like, that was not viable in any way, shape, or form. I would have pulled the trigger all those years ago, it would have been a massive failure.
Thank you for saying that. I've read a lot of business plans where I'm like, how do I tell this person this is a train wreck in writing?
Yeah. I mean, just the scale.
Sure.
I thought I could do a smaller venture, but I
sure.
thought I could do that with X amount of money. Like,
sure.
there's no way. And so it was fun to look back at that old business plan and adapt it to my current thinking and the way
sure.
that I see the world.
Mm-hmm.
Adjust the numbers
sure.
to make it viable.
Right.
And I spent a lot of nights working on that plan.
Very cool.
And then in the spring of 2017, I came to Madison a whole bunch of times to make sure that this is where I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Coming back to Wisconsin, that I wanted Madison, which I love for the lakes, the outdoor activities,
sure.
the progressive
mm-hmm.
movement that we have,
mm-hmm.
And the opportunity to make it more progressive.
Sure.
And to be a... be a beacon, hopefully, for
right.
for what can be
sure.
in business.
So,
and And I also secured a lawyer and, or an attorney and accountant.
Okay.
In the spring of 2017. And then I sold my house, left my job, and went to hike the Appalachian Trail. So, you know, I had a 6-month hiatus in the middle that all potential investors knew about. That,
sure.
I think some of the professionals I worked with were like, this is a really weird way to go about things. But, okay, we'll see if he comes back.
Sure.
And I got back in the fall, hit the ground running, secured a few more professionals to help. Nailed down the investor group, went to banks, started the real estate process.
Right.
Found a contractor and just kept rolling.
So here we go.
We signed our lease in April.
Okay.
Last year, and started construction in August.
Okay.
And wrapped up construction the day that we started brewing in January.
Isn't that how it goes, right?
Yep.
No one's ever like, it was weird. We had 2 weeks extra at the time. Yeah, never.
Imagine if that was the case.
Never. So what have been some of the challenges that you've come across or that you learned from or had no idea and they just surprised you?
I think one of the biggest challenges is how many side agreements there are, especially with festivals in Madison.
Oh, sure.
The market is not necessarily a free market, especially when you look at some of the citywide or neighborhood festivals. You look at some of the entertainment venues.
Sure.
It's difficult to get in as a small new self-distributing brewery.
Okay.
And that's a challenge that hopefully we will overcome by showing people the quality that we produce and the community connection that we offer.
Sure. Where consumers are actually asking for it.
Exactly.
So, okay. Give you more leverage.
So that was a big one. It's a big market, but we also don't have we don't need to be a huge player in it now or ever.
Sure.
We need to have strategic growth
that
pays the bills, adds to employment, and continues to utilize the capacity that we set out. You said we have a really big space, and we do.
Yeah.
We also have a pretty.
I think it's big.
We also have a pretty long lease because we want to fill that space out.
Sure.
Without having to move places, because we put a lot of money into the floor.
Oh, I bet.
We put a lot of money into a lot of things.
I bet.
And so that's our home. That's where we want to be, and we want to help bring more awareness to South Madison, which is a really cool neighborhood.
It is.
And get a couple of restaurants out there.
Sure.
Get some more businesses out there and support the housing developments that are around.
Nice. Very cool. So, Pio, where can people find you?
We're located just south of the Beltline at Rimrock.
Okay.
The address is 167 East Badger Road.
Awesome.
And you can also find us on tap at a bunch of places around town.
Nice.
An ever-growing list if you're interested. if you love our products, you can tell bars and restaurants.
Tell your favorite bartender to bring them on Delta tap. Beer.
Because we want people to enjoy it wherever they're at.
Sure.
We care about our products and our communities, and so spread the word.
That's awesome. And I imagine you guys are on social media.
Yeah, we use Facebook and Instagram. We'll expand that a little bit.
One thing at a time.
Yep. our website is at delta.beer, www.delta.
Oh, that's awesome.
.beer.
Can't forget that. Delta.beer.
Yeah, and we try to have events a lot. That's an ever-growing thing. Every month when we start a new organization, a new nonprofit, the partner, we have a kickoff event. Like I said, tomorrow we've got the one with the Ice Age Trail Alliance, which I'm really excited for.
Very cool.
And we actually have 4 events throughout the month with them.
Wow.
One of them is me talking about my Appalachian Trail experience.
Sure.
I gotta distill down 146 days and 2,200 miles into like a half an hour.
I was walking.
I'm not really sure how I'm going to do that.
Sure.
But so there's a lot of interaction that's available on Facebook or online.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, Peel, thank you for coming. This is awesome. I love your beer. I love your place. And I'm under the impression that the whole world should check out your place.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you for the opportunity to share the opportunity that we've had and the journey that that it took to get to where we're at.
This is super cool, right? Who knows who you will meet there, right?
Exactly.
That's awesome. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kateman, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com. As well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, P.O. Piotrowski. Hopefully I didn't butcher that too much.
Yeah. You got close.
Terrible. I'm from Wisconsin. Yeah, I should know this, right? Owner of Delta Beer Lab. Check them out at delta.beer.com.
Delta.beer, no.com.
My goodness gracious.
Just delta.beer.
Delta.beer. It's so easy, I broke it. Delta.beer. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at the sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link. Found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, besides getting a good beer, enjoy your business.